Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello there. This is the voice of the Internet Technical Department. Due to a microphone malfunction, Tom will spend the first 10 minutes or so of this interview off mic. Don't worry, he fixes it. Stay with us and you'll be rewarded with stories of violence and love from the world of deathmatch wrestling. Thank you. Stay safe. Love you. Bye.
Now arriving on Cultaholic Island, making his maiden voyage to Cultaholic Island before he goes to the furthest island one could possibly imagine in Australia. Hello to Australia if you're listening. Joined by Deathmatch Wrestling Superstar and North Wrestling Ultraviolet Champion, Clint Margera.
Hello, Tom.
A fellow Lost West Midlander in the Northeast.
Correct, very far from home.
This is nice. nice to be with people again.
Yeah.
Wolverhampton boy.
Mm-hmm.
How are you finding the transition from the West Midlands to the Northeast?
There's a lot more stuff to do up this way because in Wolverhampton City Centre the last time I went there, which wasn't that long ago, every single shop was just derelict. Whereas now I can go uptown here and everything's kind of bustling and there's just a more of an atmosphere. So yeah, it's a big difference.
Sacks, I lived in Wolves from 2011 till 2013, mm-hmm. and I used to work a radio station inside the Manda Shopping Centre. And I think it's just the state of society in general. The last time I went back, I was like, "Where's all the shops?"
Yeah, exactly. Where has everything gone? And everything's just, there's just no vibe there or anything, I've just noticed. So like I'll get off the train, walk through town, and I'll be like, I'm not really missing anything not being here anymore, to be honest.
Walk past, is it Wolverhampton where we got the bus station that was when that was built, that genuinely felt like a big deal. When that bus station moved in, I was like, oh, we're getting there now.
They've only just finished the train station.
Did you find that when you moved to the Northeast, the friendliness threw you somewhat?
A little bit, yeah. A little bit. Everyone's been very, or everyone is very, welcoming.
Because they're all so chatty.
Yeah.
And I found the first couple of weeks I was here, when someone was going, oh, Arita, how are you doing? Like, I was like, keep hold of my wallet. Like, is this distraction thing? And that's that. No, I'm not casting aspersions on, you know, I'm from Worcester, but I lived in Wolves for a while. But that's what it's done to me.
It does shock you a little bit, though, when someone that you've never met before is just very, oh, yeah, like, kind of thing. You're a little bit like, why would you want?
And I was so excited when you got added to North. So I was like, yes, more representation up here.
It's been a while since I was last there, before I came back properly. So it's been nice to come back and see everyone. And Bowers is awesome, as always. So, yeah, it's great to be there.
He's a good egg. And we're going to talk about you taking on beyond the Northeast, taking the world on. But to get us there, Clint, I've asked you to bring three wrestling matches that you would watch while stranded on a desert island.
Mm-hmm.
Three matches, any promotion, anytime, anywhere, that you would happily watch over and over again. So we're going to go through them throughout our chat today. What would you like your first one to be, Clint?
Always my answer for my first ever wrestling experience, nearly 1992. So WrestleMania 8, IC title match, Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper.
So how old would you have been when you first saw this then?
The show was on April the 5th, and my birthday is April the 15th. So by the time I watched it, I probably would have just gone seven. And I can remember very vividly sitting down and watching that match.
So where was it? Talk to us where you were. Who were you watching it with?
I was definitely watching it with my brother. Mm. And we couldn't afford to have Sky back then, because I think it was probably about £1,000 equivalent back in 92. So our dad's friend had Sky, and he would record the pay-per-views for us, and we would just watch them on the VHS. So we were sat in the living room. I was probably sat on the floor, staring up at the TV, watching Bret Hart and Roddy Piper have this unbelievable match. And everything about it just stuck out to me and just made me think, I love this. This is the best thing in the world. From the pre-match promo that they did, where Roddy Piper's talking about Bret Hart's mom making him bologna sandwiches and all this stuff, and like taking the mick out of him, trying to have a little bit of fun, and all the way through to the match with the bell and the crowd. And it kind of makes sense now, because there was blood in the match as well. So I definitely remember that sticking out to me. And just the atmosphere and the story behind it was just sucked me in straight away, and I was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
So how long did you think you'd been a wrestling fan when you first saw that match?
I definitely remember, I must have seen wrestling before that. There was definitely a point where I'd watched some wrestling before that. So, but I think that is the thing that just made me think, yeah, I'm never going to stop watching this. This is it now.
And with wrestling, it's one of those things where when you watch it for the first time, you either, once you kind of figure out where the wires are, you either get sort of disheartened by the fact that, oh, there's an element of performance to this, or it's a bit like being in the magic circle, I would say, where you either go, oh, it's all that, or you go, actually, I want to know how they do that. I want to know how that is.
Mm-hmm.
When was that spark first lit for you?
Probably got to around like 14, 15 years old, where we started doing stuff in like back gardens. Like we'd kind of like, me and my brother had wrestled each other at our mom and dad's house when we were watching the wrestling, breaking beds and stuff and sofas and getting in trouble and doing suplexes off windowsills. So, but when it got to like us like messing around in back gardens and stuff, and that's when it was kind of like, okay, I really want to like learn how to do this properly. Like I'd already learned by then that it was, no, I hate the F word, but I didn't care. Like it didn't bother me. I didn't care that they knew who was winning or whatever. It was just the showmanship of everything. That's what sucked me into it. That's what made me want to stay. So yeah, probably about 15 is when I kind of was like, yeah, I want to know like properly, like how things are put together and how this really, really works.
What's the most expensive thing you broke wrestling at
home? Probably the bed. Probably my mom's bed. Those slats did not last many suplexes at all.
Can you remember your mum finding you doing that?
Yeah, she's walked in various situations. Once it went from beds to bringing mattresses downstairs while she was at work, and her walking into hardcore matches with like Rose's tin lids all over the place and Quality Street tin lids everywhere.
They were the best.
They sounded amazing. Matches. They sounded amazing.
Honestly, I swear, and a whole generation don't appreciate this.
No. Nope.
The sound of a Quality Street tin lid off the head.
Wow. Yeah, it's class.
It's amazing.
We used to have these corrugated bit panels of plastic at like the second house we moved into, and it was meant to be like for a conservatory. But it never got built before. But so we would just drag these in and then just start powerbombing each other onto them and stuff. If it broke, it broke. If it didn't, oh well.
So you were deathmatch wrestling before?
Yeah.
You really knew what it was?
Yeah, from the moment I saw ECW, that's when that kind of happened for me. But
so growing up in the West Midlands then, so wrestling obviously was a big passion of yours, but what else was going on for you around 15 years ago?
I was playing a lot of football. I was a big football fan. My uncle used to play for the Wolves back in the day. So,
who's your uncle?
Jerry O'Hara.
Jerry O'Hara.
He was a Wolves player. And yeah, I really loved playing football. I loved it. But it just got to a point where we were like kids, basically. And like they were talking about getting into scraps and stuff with the other team. And like I was there to play football. Like I wanted to run down the wing like Beckham and, you know, cross balls in and score goals. And I wanted to be there for, like, the joy of it, but I just kind of fell out of love with it, basically.
Because everybody else was wanting just...
Yeah, they just wanted to get into fights. It's football. I mean, I know there's fights in football, but, like, you kids, we kids, like, who cares? Let's just score 9 goals and put your shirt over your head like Viola and... You know what I mean? But, yeah.
Do you think that had there not been, like, that sort of environment there, you might have pursued football a little more?
There are times where I think I would have carried on. Like, I had trials for Wolverhampton Town and everything, and that was kind of as, like, as far as it went for me. But I did really enjoy playing it, but there was just this other part of me that was just like, oh, my wrestling's really cool, though, isn't it?
What stopped you getting on to Wolverhampton Town?
Just fell out of love for playing football.
Yeah.
I went for the trials. I didn't get picked, so I was a little bit dejected from that as well. But by that point, I just kind of been like, do I want to carry on doing this or do I want to just start something different, start something new, go down a different avenue? And that's what I went with.
It's one of those. It's always interesting to see where the paths would divide. When it became to a point where you decided, well, actually, wrestling's going to be my thing, what was the reaction from your parents? And they've grown up watching you destroy conservatories, break slats in beds. Like, what's the vibe when you... Did you ever broach that when you were younger, or was that a conversation much further down?
No, not really. I mean, my mum was always very aware of my love for wrestling. Like, when we would... On a Sunday, I'd get my pocket money and save it up and then... go and buy VHSs and stuff from Asda and HMV and everything. So she was very aware of how much I really, really loved it. And once we started training and everything, she really saw that this is something that we both really wanted to do, me and my brother. So, yeah, she was pretty supportive, to be honest. She hasn't come to many.
No.
Which kind of makes sense based on...
Can you know the first one that she came to?
Yes, I can, actually. And I got thrown off the top of a ladder... through a table to the outside, right in front of her.
Oh, I bet she was delighted.
So that was the first and last time that she came to watch me wrestle.
What was her, like, the vibe from her? What did she say when you finished that first match? Have you seen her backstage? Have you seen her coming out? She's watched you get thrown around, thrown off a ladder, through a table. Is she still as supportive as she was when she walked in?
Yeah, she's still supportive. She's just kind of looking at me as if to be like... I'm just glad that you're okay, but what are you doing? What are you doing that for? And I was like, did you hear the crowd?
That's it.
I'm okay.
was the adrenaline, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Hearing the crowd really get behind.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's been like that from the very beginning. From the moment we did our first show, hearing like the crowd reaction is one of the things that carries you through to the very end, which I'm sure every wrestler will say the same. But yeah. The adrenaline is just ridiculous.
So we want to get into sort of your how you got in training-wise into it, but let's do your second match before we get there.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had the WrestleMania 8 match between Bret Hart and Roddy Piper. What was like your second one to be?
Second, I'm going to go with Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka.
Ah, there we go.
From ECW Heatwave 98, the... easily in the top five of any pay-per-view from any year, from any company, from any country. But that match is one that really stood out to me.
These two have had bangers.
Yep.
Right? And I'm curious to know what puts this one just slightly above the others.
For me, it was definitely, as far as I can remember, my first real introduction to these two wrestlers. And it was through this match where I learned about their feud from Japan, from the FMW days, and how long it had been going and how many times they wrestled each other. But this was definitely my introduction to those guys. And from the moment I saw Tanaka, I was like, this dude is my favourite Japanese wrestler. His entrance music is so sick and so classically Japanese. And then you've got Mike Awesome, who is... 6'6", doing shit in... Can I swear?
Yeah, you can swear.
Doing shit that people that size and that weight class weren't even thinking about doing in 1998. Like, jumping off the top rope to the outside, like springboards and stuff. And that match just blew me away. It's like, what, 12 minutes, I think, like bell to bell. And they just go balls to the wall and it's unreal.
Is there a moment in that match that you, in your time in the wrestling world, you've paid homage to?
Absolutely. Yeah. The only reason I do a rolling elbow is because of Masao Tanaka. I've done the Diamond Dust multiple times. He later on started doing the sliding elbow, which I do in every single match. He's definitely a huge influence on me.
When it comes to that side of wrestling, what led you down that path of doing more the deathmatch? Because obviously as a kid, you were doing that stuff anyway, but when you got into training, I can't imagine that that concept of a match was pushed onto you.
I just saw ECW and I was just like, this is the style that I want to do. But I could see that they weren't just jumping through a table for the sake of it. There was a reason behind it, and they were wrestling as well. It wasn't just picking up chairs and throwing them at each other. Like, there was wrestling moves in between. So I always knew that was the style that I wanted to do, but I wanted to learn how to do the basics and the real stuff first, and then you learn how to pepper in and think, well, okay, well, how did I do that through a table? How could I use a chair to get to here? And so, yeah, it was just, it was always the thing that I wanted to do. But yeah, it wasn't ever pushed on me. It was always my decision. This is what I want to do. And the training just kind of brought it all together.
Where did you go to get those basics?
We were training with the Hunter brothers.
Nice, yeah. They're legends in the West, mate.
Absolutely.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they are unbelievably talented at what they do. They're so good.
How did you discover that they were doing training to start with?
We would go to shows in Dudley. There was a company called FCW that ran in Baggeridge, and the Hunters were like one of the mainstays there.
So from those shows, I believe you had guys. Would Madman Max been on some of those shows?
Madman
Manson.
Yeah,
sorry. Yeah,
he was definitely around. We would go to like 1PW, and he would be on those shows as well, at the Doncaster Dome back in the day. But he was always around, and there was a couple of places in Birmingham that he was very pretty much a regular for. And the same with the Hunters, and it just kind of grew and grew. But yeah, that's how we learned.
I think America has learned. I think the rest of the world as well. Like, obviously the UK is a hotbed for wrestling, but the West Midlands in particular, the Midlands in general, has created some pretty big names in its time as well. People see Pete Dunne on a regular basis now, see with Butch, but so many, like Tyler Bate, you're Trent Seven, so you've got that whole family of wrestlers there. And the Midlands somehow has this stardust scattered through it. Why do you think the Midlands, more than anywhere else, has that?
I don't know, we got Mastiff as well.
Mastiff, of course!
Who is, again, just the knowledge that we learned from training with and being trained by, on some occasions, Dave, was unreal. And I was fortunate enough to wrestle him quite a few times back in the early days of Fight Club Pro. But, yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why the Midlands has just got this talent. It's just, it's there and it's always been there. And there's still, you know, the Hunters are still going, well, Lee is. So there's still that hotbed, as you say, but I don't know why it's, I'm not sure.
It's, who would you say from that neck of the woods is a bit of an unsung wrestling hero? Someone maybe that you've encountered along the road and gone, they deserve more flowers.
Ooh. On the spot now.
Millie McKenzie as well, who's done really well from our neck of the woods, and it's always lovely to see Millie doing more and
DeReese.
More. Man like DeReese, lest we forget.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Dan Maloney.
It's something in the water. In
when you start dropping the names, it goes on and on and on and on and on.
Something in the water in the West Midlands, and you love to see it. You love to see it. When you were getting that training by the Hunter brothers, so you've gone from like wrestling around the house, wrestling in the garden, and now you're going, right, we're ready to make a go of this, and you're with the Hunter brothers. How did getting in there with them for that first day differ from what you thought it would be?
I realised that my brain doesn't work as quickly as I thought it did.
Okay.
With the whole tech side of everything. like the chain wrestling, I realised that some people's brains work a lot quicker than others, because it was always something that I was quite nervous doing, because I would watch other people do it and they would just do it so easily and so fluently, and I would just be like, right, okay, but I need to go through it step by step by step to really make it work for me. But that's something that I definitely realised very early on. But that confidence grew with each training session. So, but yeah, I just didn't realise how they work really close and tight with each other and stuff as well. And like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about now.
Yeah, it's okay. You probably thought there was more of a closeness with them than there was. Obviously, because they're a tag team, and you see them as a tag team, and then when the veil slips, and you actually see what really goes on there. But the technical side of it's interesting, because when you watch wrestlers putting their matches together, it's kind of like this. There's this sort of weird kinetic energy about how they do it, and I'm always fascinated by that. I mean, obviously, when you said you started, that first part was difficult for you. Is that something you still struggle with now? Is that something that you maybe given workarounds to?
I've kind of worked around it, definitely. I mean, I'll do it every now and then. Like, I don't necessarily think that the style that I do, I don't have to do that kind of style.
No, never lends itself.
But I mean, you can throw it in every now and then. It's good to have it in your locker. I understand that completely. But then I'll watch people like Sabre and I'll be like, what is he doing? I don't understand. My eyes don't work quickly. My brain is like, how are you bending all these people that way? Do you know what I mean? But yeah, it's definitely good to know and it's good to learn. And I would recommend learning that to anybody. But for me, I see my style as more of a bit, well, it's very brawly.
Well, it's incredibly brawly, because if you watch on the Patreon, you'll see the North Wrestling Ultraviolent Championship in front of us here. One of many similar belts that you have won, which sort of symbolise that hardcore style, that deathmatch style. When did you realise, once you were training, that you were going to start leaning more into that way of doing things?
I started seeing stuff like Combat Zone Wrestling. I'd also seen the Cactus Jack Terry Funk no rope barbed wire match from Japan on a tape, and that's when I was kind of like, yeah, I want to step this up a little bit, so we'll graduate from tables to barbed wire, and then further on we'll get to glass, and then we'll start bleeding everywhere. And definitely Combat Zone, the old IWA Japan FMW videos. That was when I was like, yeah, this is definitely it now.
Talk us through the sort of the mentality of that first time that you went to an extreme in that way. So can you remember when your first death match was? If you can't, the power of the internet means that I can run your memory.
I would say I remember the first time I ever used barbed wire, which is kind of what I would say was my first death match. I think it was against Devon Moore
I feel like I'm testing you.
The Fight Club Pro Bound to Violence tournament. And it was a first round match, and he was the CZW World Heavyweight Champion at that point. And that was the first time I did barbed wire. So that's what I would class as my first death match.
And what a graduation to do it for CCW, for a CCW title as well. Because to go from watching it to suddenly being there and being amongst it, is there like a pressure there? Because you're like, I watched this and I really want to do this style, and here I am and I'm doing it.
Yeah, I mean, there was. They'd brought a lot of people over as well, because that was in a nightclub in Wolverhampton. Mm. That was in the Planet upstairs. Rip those days. So, yeah, but there was a lot of people there from CZW, like the promoter was there. There was a lot of talent there that I'd watched on video and stuff. There was other talent from Europe. WXW were there as well, and they were still doing death matches. So I really wanted to make like a good impression, because I wanted to, you know, network, and didn't want people to think that I was just a complete straw who didn't know what he was doing. But
was there really that fear still at that point? Because you've been wrestling for a couple of years by that point. When you had that match, was there that fear that still maybe you were not, maybe suffering a bit of imposter syndrome?
I mean, I still suffer from it these days in matches, yeah. And I don't think I'm alone. I don't think I'm alone when I say stuff like that. I think everyone has that kind of little bit of imposter syndrome sometimes. But it is something that I still deal with. But yeah, at that point, absolutely. I was just like, I just want people to take me seriously, and I don't want people to think that I'm just messing around and just doing it because I can't do the other stuff very well. Do you know what I mean?
Do you get that a lot? Is that a very popular misconception?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's so much discourse about how deathmatch wrestlers don't know how to wrestle. They don't know what they're doing. They're just doing this because they couldn't do the other stuff. And there's always this kind of, but yeah, that's Twitter for you, I guess.
Do you think in some cases, obviously there's so many that push the boundaries of that style and hone it and craft it and are very proud of it. And we see a lot of that in the UK as well as in the US. But do you think there is something to be said for there are people who maybe do that style to avoid doing the traditional way of wrestling, yeah, shall we say? There was not to, I don't want to say put words in your mouth spark a controversy.
With everything, there is a group or some people who will do it, and they will do it in a way that kind of helps these comments like that come about. There are people who don't know how to do it properly. There are people who shouldn't be anywhere near a ring or whatever they're doing it in. But I feel like that's the same with every style of wrestling, to be honest. You can spot those kind of people a mile off. And that's why I don't like the whole thing of just picking stuff up and throwing it, and then they throw it at you, and then that's it. You got to tell me a story, do you know what I mean? Like, that's the whole reason that I got into wrestling. The whole story, Bret Hart, Roddy Piper, there's a story there straight away. If you've never seen him wrestle before, that promo, bang. He sold.
And even in that match, they go to use a weapon, but don't.
Yeah. So and there's blood and there's the emotion and so forth. But yeah, like with every style, there's always someone who's doing it, and it's just a bit like, A, I don't think I'd really want to get in the ring with you. B, you're not really doing us any favours by doing it the way you're doing it. C, you should probably just stop or learn how to do it properly.
There's an art to doing it properly, because to do it the way that you do it, there's such risk that comes with it, because, you know, a light tube being smashed across your head, you can only really prep for so much of that. You can't prep for every shard of glass that's going to come off that fucker. Is there a moment that you have had in a death match where you've lay there and you've gone, all right, that's it, I'm done now. That's career, that's game over now. I've gone too far.
I mean, there's been moments of panic when I got thrown through a plug board by Chris Brooks, and it like came down like that, and plug got kind of just ripped my arm open and left that one. So I was looking at a massive,
I was going to ask you about your scars in a
big,
minute.
Big gaping hole in my arm, and I just remember rolling over to Ricky Shane Page and going like, "My arm, look at my arm, look at my arm." And he was like, it's okay. You haven't got to do anything else. Just go to the hospital." So that was probably like the last time where I was very like, this is a bit nuts, isn't it? Like, just doing this stuff. But then once that wears off, I'm like, yeah, I'm good to go again.
You got the dog in you again, and away you go. But it's interesting stuff like that. It shows trust of being in there with the right people, and you've been in there with incredible death match wrestlers like Ricky Shane Page, like Matt Tremont, and people like that. Was those moments, they are few and far between, but it sounds like you're in there with the right people where if something does go awry, they're there to look after you and guide you through it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like there's some people who you see you're going to be in a match with them, and you're like, okay, I know that if anything was to ever happen or go wrong, I know that these guys are going to look after me. I know that this person will take care of me, and we can work around it and get to where we need to get to in the match. So you see that and you're like, okay, these are definitely the people that are like, they know exactly what they're doing.
When you've been speaking to people backstage that maybe you're not sure about, or maybe you are, has there been something that has been pitched to you for a match that you've gone, no? Or are you just like, whatever, we'll do it out there, we'll go for it?
I mean, weapons wise, or like bump wise or spot wise, There's not really much that I've kind of like said no to. I can't think of anything that's really stood out. It's always kind of been like, oh, well, if it's almost been like a comedic kind of spot, because that's not really the stuff that I do. Like, I mean, I've done matches where there's been elements of comedy in it and stuff. But if we're having like a serious match and it's just like, oh, well, just chuck in this little bit of comedy, does it really work? Does it really fit? I'd rather we just kind of just brushed over it and not really gone for it, because it doesn't need to be in the match. I don't feel like it's part of the match. So it's normally just little things like that. But apart from like, as far as weapons go, there's nothing that I've really said no to yet.
Okay. Well, there's room there for somebody to push your boundaries a little bit. Can we talk about scars and stuff?
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Because, and I say it because Clint is a very handsome gentleman.
Oh, thank you.
You are. But I couldn't help but notice the bump on your head as you arrived here today.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell us the story?
I think this has just built up just over time. Like, I can't really think of one...
I've never noticed it before.
One specific thing that's made it happen. And do you know what? I don't think it was very noticeable. And it seems to me that ever since we came back after the pandemic, everyone has noticed it. But it was definitely there before that. It's been there for a while, but everyone has noticed it. And I'll be standing in like underneath a light, and then the shadow will be like really, will make it pop out. And people are like, oh my God, are you okay? What's that?
Oh.
Like, it's just... A lump.
Is it a build? Is it from like? Is it something biology based? It's not wrestling based.
I think it's come from getting stapled.
Yeah,
I think it's come from getting stapled in the head, because I've got another tiny little one here, which is another place where I'll get stapled kind of every now and then.
Do you tend to? Because I don't want to get too inside baseball, but I just quite enjoy the going into the weeds a bit on putting together, so because always wild death matches always look like they're wild and untamed, but I imagine there is some controlled order to that chaos.
Yes.
There has to be. One must have order in my chaos. So you have a little bit there which you pointed out, and I hadn't seen it until you pointed it out. So would you always say, okay, if we're doing staples, staple there?
I've never really liked
it. I realized I did that and it looked like a knobhead motion, and it wasn't. It was a staple motion.
I've never really mentioned it unless they have already seen it and thought, I'll stay away from that. But I did actually have go and have it checked out about three or four weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because I was getting a little bit weird about it, because loads of people were noticing it. And I was just like, it's been there for ages, and has it just got bigger or whatever? But the doctor said that it's just a soft tissue.
Can they lance it and will goo come out? Like a pimple popper type deal?
Probably could, but you said if you want anything like that, you're talking about going private, which right. Obviously...
Yeah.
Money talks. As much as I love wrestling, it doesn't pay as well as we all want it to sometimes. But it's just kind of... He said if it ever starts hurting, then come back. But at the moment, it's just... Just a lump. I'm just dealing with it, yeah.
You've got, I've spotted this as well, just near your tattoo.
Uh-huh.
A scar all across there. Is there a story behind that one? I'm really excited to find one, and you just go, oh, I just scratched it on the fence. fetching the cat. Cat did it.
Some of them will be from the cat.
Bone did it.
Shout out Bone. But that, I think, that is from the first Death House match, which was Drew Parker's first ever death match, because I remember us taking the picture like this, and I remember seeing the massive cut. So that will either be from a light tube or carpet strips.
Oh.
Which, incidentally, is probably my favourite death match weapon.
A carpet? I was going to come to your favourite weapons.
Yeah.
Why is carpet strip beat out your common or garden light tube or board of... nails?
It's just one of those that everyone kind of can relate to.
Yeah.
Remember being a kid running up the stairs, or as an adult, running up the stairs, you're late for work, you've only got one sock on, you step too far onto the step, catch your big toe on a bit of carpet grip. or you're walking through your house and you catch it. So it's one of those ones that people can be like, yeah, that hurts. We all know that hurts. Like Lego or colourful.
Or a plug.
Or colourful building blocks, as Vader Scott
as Vader Scott
pointed
Scott
out, yeah.
Politely called it.
Yeah, or a plug. Yes, treading on a plug. We've all done that.
It does weirdly loop back to how you want to tell stories and relatable stories in death matches, and a carpet strip does that. It tells a very relatable story. Do you have a scar or a cut on your body from a death match that maybe we can't see that you always remember where it came from?
I don't, actually.
Because the one from Drew Parker, I think, is as we'll get to, wonderfully timed.
Mm. Absolutely.
But otherwise, you've got away relatively scot-free.
Yeah, I mean, I wear a T-shirt, which, you know, does protect you very slightly. Mm. You know, it is just a bit of thin material, but I've never really had, like, the physique, I don't feel, to wrestle without a top on. I've always been very self-conscious about it, to be honest. I don't mind having my arms out and they can get cut up to whatever, but I've always been really funny about walking around with tops off and stuff like that. I've always been very, it's not really for me.
Does that come back to a bit of the imposter syndrome, self-esteem type?
Probably, yeah. A little bit, yeah. Yeah, probably. But I mean, there's been times where like my top's been ripped off during a match.
Mm.
There's only been two of those occasions, thankfully. And they're not very well documented, so don't worry about it. You won't see it anyway.
I was going to go find them now. I was intrigued. No,
one of them is on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I've got pictures of the other one, so that's about it. But yeah. But yeah, as far as like my main body, I've got some on my back because obviously glass cuts through T-shirt material and stuff, and barbed wire rips you through. But I haven't really got anything that's really bad. Just my arms, really.
Yeah. We've mentioned your best weapon, which is the carpet strips. What's your worst? Like one, this probably falls into two categories, I was thinking. One which is like, the worst is in like, oh, it's just a bit of a rubbish weapon. And one which is like, I hate taking this. It makes me sad.
Do you know what I always, whenever I take one of these in a match, I always think these hurt so much more than we make to believe. Chair shots to the back.
See, it's funny because there were wrestlers are sort of told to do that now rather than the head because it's safer, but they still hurt like buggery.
But when you've took like the gut shot and then you're on all fours, those chair shots to the back hurt more than any glass or barbed wire or stupid other thing that I've done. That's when I'm just like, wow, I just really need to stop taking these. These hurt real bad.
I like that of all the weapons, it wasn't like a board of broken light bulbs. It wasn't barbed wire baseball bats. It was, oh, just chairs.
Yeah, chair shots just, to the
just,
back.
Just your common or garden chair to your common or garden back. As we said at the start of the interview, you're a West Midlands boy that now finds yourself in the North East. What brought you up here?
A girl.
Oh, it's always a girl, isn't it?
And she wasn't even from Newcastle, or if she isn't from Newcastle, I should say. My girlfriend, which obviously some people will know, Deathmatch Cutie.
What?
No, I'm joking. Yeah, so...
How'd you guys meet?
We started speaking online just before the vid.
Oh, okay.
And we just carried on talking, and she was living in Hull at the time. She's originally from Bradford, and she was working in like a little like Grebo rocker shop in Hull, and they opened one up here and asked her if she wanted to be the store manager for it. So she moved and I followed, and we'd already been officially together for a few months before that. I was just like getting the train to like Hull because I was doing a job where it was like 4-on-4 off at the time. So right. I would do my job for 4 days and then go halt for 4 days, come back, rinse, repeat.
And you know when someone's special where you voluntarily agree to spend 4 days working and then 4 days in Hull?
It's not that bad, you know, Hull.
I think that's their slogan.
Plus it meant that
Hull. It's not that bad, you know.
Plus it meant like I'd come up with the funny things like, oh, see you in Hull.
Yeah, that's easy.
To Hull and back.
See you in Hull.
Only Falls and Horses.
How has Gabby made you a better person?
Ooh. She makes me do the things that I will second guess over and over and over again. But if I wasn't with her, there's a lot of things that I've done where, if, like I say, if we weren't together, I probably wouldn't have done them. Like, there's been times where I've turned stuff down pre-relationship, where I've been like, oh no, I can't do this booking because of work, or I can't do this trip because of work. But she has made me realise that, you know, it's important to like have a job and stuff, but if you love something, the amount that you do, then just go and do it. And then there's always going to be another opportunity for like work and stuff, but the wrestling is what you love to do. So she has really like made me realise that just because you quit a job to go and do something else, there's something that other people would be like, oh, can't believe you're quitting your job to go and do that. She's made me realise that my passion comes first. And without her, there's a lot of stuff that I said, like I say, that I probably wouldn't have done.
So you quit a job to pursue wrestling even further. So this is the 4 days on, 4 days off job, and you went. Can you remember the day that you handed in your notice?
Yeah, it was like September. I just nonchalant kind of just walked up and went, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, there's stuff that I want to do, and this isn't really working. I can't get the time off. It's not very, what's the word? Not very accommodating for my other interests. And yeah, like I say, without her, I would never have done that.
Were they all right with it? Or did they try and keep you? Was there any, you was like, this matters it?
Yeah.
Just deal with it, I guess.
Yeah, it is what it is. I've made my mind up. That's my decision. And you always feel like it's going to go one or two ways when you quit a job, don't you? They're always going to like try and make you stay, or they're just going to be like, all right then.
There's part of you that you want them to make you stay a little bit. Is that weird?
Because you still want
to turn it down.
Yeah.
But you're like, just, you know, fight for me a little bit.
Yeah, because when you go in and then they're like, oh, okay, then thanks. You're just kind of like, oh, did you even really give a shit that I was here in the first place? Like, why did I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning?
And you think of all the things I could have gone and done that. I could have gone and done that. But
yeah.
Yeah, I get. But you didn't. And so now you've thrown yourself headfirst into the wrestling world. What's changed about the mentality since going all in? Somewhat wrestling pun.
I just wanted to just take it way more seriously than I was. Not to be all like walking into locker rooms and being like, this is serious, this is wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like, I still want to have fun. Like, I still want to go into changing rooms and like have a laugh with people and like be excited. And that's what I try and do every time I go to a show now. I try to be that person that's like watching other people's matches and like stuff and being like, oh, that was so sick, and like hyping up when they come back through. So I just took it a bit more seriously, and I've taken like my health and fitness a lot more seriously over the last like year or so. Like, I've dropped a little bit of weight because I love Domino's, but I can't eat Domino's every weekend. You know what I mean?
You can, but it doesn't go that well.
But so I've just started taking everything just with a bit more. Okay, well, I want to make sure I look good. I want to make sure that I feel good. And people have started noticing. Like, Will Cruz was very complimentary to me after a TNT show. Noticed that I dropped a little bit of weight, saying how well I was moving around the ring. Rory is another one who's kind of like checked in with me every now and then and just been like, how's this going? How's that going? And he's always noticed. And he's dropped a little bit of weight as well. And I can see that in his wrestling. But yeah, so I've just thought, if I'm going to like do this, you know, more often and more full time, quote unquote, but I've just got to knuckle down and, you know, make myself look the part a little bit more.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And you've thrown yourself into all the aspects of it, including some big matches on the horizon for you. The man that gave you that scar in his first death match, Drew Parker, you're going to be competing in his last. How did that come about?
He dropped me a message just before he moved back from Japan, saying that he'd done his last ever death match in the US against John Wayne Murdoch. He had his last ever death match in Japan in a tag match against Kasai and Takeda. And he never got his last UK death match, like, advertised. And obviously we've been through a lot together from his first ever one. Even before that, we'd do like hardcore matches and stuff together, but never death match until his first ever one. And for it to end, or for him to choose to end it with me, is just a very full circle moment for the both of us, I think. It's definitely going to be emotional. I guarantee that someone's going to cry. Probably me, Andrew. But yeah, I'm very excited for it. It's a very, very big moment for both of us. And I'm glad that we can do it at somewhere like TNT, who have been very accommodating to me since I started wrestling there, and Drew had done some matches for them as well before he left for Japan. So it does mean a lot that we can do it in Liverpool at TNT, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Now, by the time you hear this, the match will have happened at TNT, August the 19th. It's happening. Looking back on the time that you spent with, obviously Drew Parker went and did great things abroad, and he's finishing up his death match career here. What's a moment that you two have shared away from the ring that you always think about and makes you smile?
Well, for a while, Drew was in between places to stay. And at this point, I'd just bought a house. And Drew actually, like, I moved him in because he didn't know I have anywhere to stay. So I moved him in and he lived with me for a while. He had a nice big spacious room. I was a lovely host. Some people know that, some people don't, but yeah. So we had a lot of time together, a lot of nights talking about wrestling, and back when I was drinking, we'd go down the pub and talk about wrestling and everything and watch wrestling together. So yeah, that's like a quite a big part of our history together.
Is it one of those things where now that you're full-time, just to kind of branch off onto that, because you talk about, you know, with you and Drew living together, you talked a lot about wrestling. I know that Gabby's a massive part of the North wrestling scene as well, and we're very grateful to have her as a part of North too. But when suddenly the hobby becomes the work and the work becomes the hobby, like, how do you, what do you do to break away from that? Do you have, like, something that you do that isn't wrestling?
I mean, I don't play. I've used to play bass sometimes, every now and then back in the day. But music is like a massive part of my life as well. Going to gigs. Love going to gigs. So that's kind of like my, if I'm doing this, then I'm not thinking or talking about wrestling. Not in a bad way, but it's just you've got to have you've got to have that little break. So yeah, so like music, collecting vinyl, that kind of stuff, going to gigs. binge watching stuff. Me and Gabby do talk about wrestling a lot, which is understandable. We're both super into it, obviously. We're both really into like gigs and music and stuff, so that's kind of our away from wrestling stuff.
What gigs have you got coming up?
Funeral for a Friend, Finch, The Used have obviously just announced their December tour. So by the time this comes out, I will have got tickets.
You'll have spent the Australia money on tickets.
Because they are my favourite band of all time ever. Obviously, I use them as my entrance music.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We've got Bring Me the Horizon coming up next year. Just when they pop up, quite a few. Yeah,
some decent things on the horizon. That's good, that. Mm. As well as picking three matches, I also like to, this is just throw this at you, you're not in any trouble. I like to also ask you to choose, as well as three wrestling matches, a movie, an album, and a luxury item to take with you. Okay. So in terms of the luxury item, it can be a bit of tech, it could be something with some sentimental value. It can be anything like that. So it's a very broad one. But you can think on that whilst you tell me what your movie would be.
Mm.
One movie that you can take with you, that stays with you.
So I'm trying to think, it's like, do I pick my favourite film of all time? Or do I pick one that I know that I've watched more times than my favourite film of all time? See, it's between Fight Club and True Romance.
That is a beautiful mixture.
Yeah. As much as I love Fight Club, I would probably say it is my favourite film of all time. I think I've definitely watched True Romance more times than I've seen Fight Club.
Oh.
So I would take True Romance because it's a bit of a comfort.
It's one that you just put on and just have on in the background. Yeah. And just reset,
the cast is brilliant. The music is brilliant, which is obviously the theme song from Badlands. If you want to go deep into where Tarantino got his influences from and stuff like that. But
definitely.
The cast is brilliant. The script's brilliant. Everything about it is just class. It's so good. What a brilliant film.
As a gig man and a music man, you've got to pick one album. You can have it on vinyl if you like.
Okay, I'll take it. I'll take it on vinyl. It's probably going to be the Used debut album.
Okay. Why does that one get the nod over others?
I just think of where I was, like, when I first ever heard The Used. Like, I was kind of, I'd become like a bit of an indie kid. Mm. So I was huge into Oasis back in the day. And like, my music taste was changing. And when I first heard The Used, I was like, yeah, like, I'm an emo kid. From now on, until the day that I die.
Where were you when you first heard it?
I was sitting in the living room at my mum's house, and I remember we were watching like an Osbournes. Jack and Kelly Osbourne were doing like a music video countdown, and it was in like October, November of 2002. And the album had come out in June 2002.
Did they do it on Scuzz or Kerrang?
It was one of those, or it was actually on MTV, because obviously the Osbournes was massive as well.
Oh, it would have been on MTV, wouldn't it? Yeah.
And I remember they were each picking a band that like weren't very well known, and that was one of the picks. It was The Taste of Ink, and as soon as I heard those first couple of lines, that 4 o'clock in the fucking morning, I was like, yeah, these guys. And then I've just immersed myself in every single thing that they've done. But that debut album, hands down, one of the best debut albums by any band ever.
Amazing. How about a luxury item then? What have you got for us?
I think I'm just going to have to be pretty... Can I take my phone? I think I probably just would take a phone.
Yeah, you could take your phone. Why not?
So then I can at least text and like get some pictures of my cat.
Oh, yeah.
And Gabby.
That's it. You can't... I like how Kat got mentioned first.
Yeah, well...
That's the rules. It's okay. As a black cat dad myself, I get it.
Gabby would always mention the cat before me. 100%.
What's the story behind Bone, by the way?
When we first moved into our first place up here, we were just kind of like, first of all, Gabby is cat-obsessed. Mm. Absolutely adores cats and has had a cat in every house, in every city that she's ever lived in. So once we moved up here, she was like, we've got to get a cat. We have to get a cat. And I was like, okay, well, my mum's had cats before. That's fine. I'm I'm okay, I'm easy, cat or dog, whatever. And then literally we got her from like 8 weeks old and just we both just melted, fell in love with her as soon as she came out of the little carrier with a little squeak. And we were just trying to think of something spooky and cool to name her. So we just came up with Bone, and she's brilliant.
Is there, as much as cats are brilliant, as my boy Pablo is great, he can be a dickhead, right? I think that's inherent in, especially black cats, they have this dickhead streak. He will, if I feed him in the morning and then I'll go to work, I'll get a, sometimes get a picture from Alex of him sat there next to his empty cat bowl going, "Mother, as you can see, it is empty and I die." And she's like, "Did you feed him?" "Yes, I fed him." "Okay, well, he's just being a bullshitter then." Like, is there something that Bone does that's quite dickheadish?
Well, she was a very indoor cat because we were living in a flat, like a house that had been converted into two flats. So we were on the ground floor. Thank God we're out of there now. But we didn't really have much of. In fact, we had no garden. It was just a concrete little yard. So we were always like, well, she's never going outside, staying indoors. And then we moved to a house and we've got a garden now and everything. So once we'd settled, we started letting her out the back and stuff. But she's got a tendency to disappear. But she'll stay in the confines of the garden. But because they're in quite dark spaces and because she is 100%, there's no specks of white on her or little white paws or anything like that. It's very hard to find her sometimes. But now she's got like a cute little like pink leopard print collar.
Oh.
So she's a bit more noticeable. But yeah, she will hide.
She'll hear you calling her and she'll go, "I'm just going to hide."
Yeah. She's started to like learn how to get behind the back of the shed now.
Oh, little prick. I discovered from when Pablo got out the one day, I spent hours looking for him in the woods next to our house, rummaging through nettles and all this, only to find that he'd camped out at the hedge next to the front door and saw all this hullabaloo of people looking for him and just went, "Oh, this is fun." Prick. I've never been so happy and so angry at the same time.
Yeah.
I'll do that to you. So I'm glad that Bone's giving you the same grief.
when she goes missing, it always seems to be when I'm the one who's let her out. And I'll panic and I'll get anxiety about it. I'm like, "Oh my God, of course it would be the time that I let her out that I can't find her." And then I'm literally sticking my head through bushes and stuff trying to find her. And then she'll literally just walk out the back of the shed, like, and I'll turn around and she'll just be sat there, like,
"What's the matter?
What's your problem? What are you doing? Where's the treats?"
Well, that's it. This is the thing. Well, the first, when they get out, they apparently, indoor cats only go as far as a 50 mile radius.
Oh, okay.
This is what I learned after.
Right,
after
okay.
Me and Adam Pacitti had been out looking for the bugger. But they only go within 50 metres of where they live. So if she ever gets out, she's probably only gone like just the other side of the gate somewhere.
Right.
But you have dreamies, right? The dreamy shake, the bag shake. It's weird. It's hypnotic.
Yeah.
Like if I can't find him in our home somewhere, I will stand in the kitchen and just shake a bag of dreamies. Within 25 seconds, "Oh, hi. There you are."
Oh, I will be doing this now, are we? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
So cool. If in doubt, stand in the middle of the garden, shake the dreamies.
Yeah.
Guarantee. Within seconds, we'll go, "Hello."
The foil of the food packet as well.
Oh, that's it. Let's do that.
The crinkle.
Yes, yeah. Here I am. Hello. Your third and final match, sir. So we've had some bangers so far. We've had Mike Awesome, Masato Tanaka getting love, Bret Hart and Roddy Piper. What's your third and final one going to be, sir?
My favourite and my personal opinion, the best Cage of Death from CZW. Sammy Callahan versus Danny Havoc. Cage of Death 11.
Now, those are two names from CZW lore. Where would you have been when you first saw that one?
Probably sitting in front of the computer, finding it on the internet somewhere, I imagine.
This would have been... what year was this?
2009 right. Is when it happened.
So there would have been some access, but not the access that we certainly have now.
Not at all.
You could just half type it in and it's got every instance for you. There's a bit of digging going on there. But is there a moment from that match that you still think about? Is there something from that match that makes you that makes it the best match?
The final bump is legendary. And it actually caused Sammy to get sliced pretty much from like in between his shoulder blades, like all the way up the back of his neck. And there's the on the replays, you'll see like a little backstage shot, and there's a cut that's like that wide, I think.
Jeez.
Probably about that long, which is pretty gnarly. But again, it was the blow off of a massive storyline that they were doing, which involved kidnapping people and causing riots in the ECW arena. Like, there was a bit where Sammy kind of like threatened to cut his wrist because they were part of this thing, because they were part of this thing called the Switchblade Conspiracy, yeah. Him and John Moxley. And Sammy got through the crowd, and like people thought he was being serious, and it led to like a pretty much riot in the ECW arena. But yeah, everything about it was amazing. And Danny Havoc, I don't know what else I can say about him that I haven't already said. My opinion, best US deathmatch wrestler of all time. Gone way too soon. And I'll always be thankful for the time that I got to spend with him. And he was very important in me actually going over to do TOD. Him and Ricky Shane Page really went to bat for me for that. So, yeah, but the match, if you haven't seen it, please go and watch it. If you love deathmatch wrestling and you haven't seen it, then how you haven't seen it if you love deathmatch wrestling, I don't know. But it's amazing. They just kill each other, and it's so good.
Is there something that Danny Havoc told you during your time together that stays with you? Something in particular?
Nothing in particular. I always just think of how he was with people from like the moment he met them. Like from the very first moment that I met him, I felt like I was his best friend. And that's something that I've kind of like tried to carry with me. And I always want to make people feel comfortable. And if we've never met, and if we're having a match together or not, or if you're in this style, I want you to like know that there are good people involved, and you know, we can be mates and stuff. And that's kind of, like I say, something that I've always just carried with me from the moment I met him. Just noticed how nice he was, and he didn't need to be. And I always get worried because I obviously knew of him before I met him. And you always have that thing like, oh, this guy's not a dickhead. What if he's like, just straws me off and he's just like, yeah, whatever. But he wasn't. He was everything that I kind of wanted him to be, and that never changed. And yeah.
I always find when you meet your heroes like that, that it inspires you to go, I never want to make anybody feel the way I thought they would make me feel. Mm. You know what I mean? Obviously he didn't, but like it's you strive then to go, I want to be like that now. Whenever anybody new comes across, I want to make them feel as welcome as Danny Havoc made me feel. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
And that is among many things, that's Danny's legacy. And I think that's really nice. Mm,
absolutely. Yeah. Just like I say, I will never not think like that now when someone new comes along. I want them to be like, oh, Clint was cool, like he wasn't a dickhead or anything. And if I've ever come across that way, I apologise, but never my intention. But yeah, it is something, like I say, that stuck with me. And Sammy as well, from the moment we first met, we were like one of the first people in the UK that ever brought him over and stuff, back at Fight Club Pro. And again, just really nice to all of us. And we just tried to get on and just be mates and treat people how we want to be treated.
You've worked with so many of your deathmatch wrestling heroes over the years. Is there one that really, obviously Danny Havoc does and Sami Callihan does, but is there one that you would still really love to work with that you haven't had a chance yet? It's a nice opportunity here to maybe put this out, manifest destiny.
I'm a big believer in manifest.
Yeah. Here's a great platform to manifest.
I mean, I would love the opportunity, relish the opportunity to have a match with Nick Gage before he stops, because it's Nick Gage.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what else I could say. To be in the ring with Nick Gage would be a dream come true for me. And like I say, whenever he's going to hang him up, I don't know when that's going to happen. Seems like it's a million miles away, to be honest. But yeah, a one-on-one with Nick Gage, dream. I would love that.
Manifested.
Yeah.
Manifest that destiny. The destiny before you is Australia. By the time you're hearing this, You are, I don't want to say you're in Australia because I've done that flight and it is fucking horrible. So you might still be on the way.
Yeah, I might be either asleep, reading a book or buying Wi-Fi.
Regretting all decisions about traveling to Australia because Australia's gorgeous. It's such a long way.
Where did you stop on the way?
We stopped at Abu Dhabi for what felt like 20 minutes and it was straight back on a 9-hour flight. I was like, oh my God.
I've got Kuala Lumpur.
Oh,
I'm quite excited, to be honest.
Glad.
I want to see the Malaysian delicacies.
You will see the Malaysian check-in. I don't know whether you'll have much time to see other things. But maybe, hey, look, how long is your layover?
4 hours.
Oh, you'll have plenty of time then. That's great.
I was thinking about like really like poshing it up and like going to get a massage or something, or taking some change of clothes in my carry-on and having like a shower or something in between.
Honestly, you're right. It's your holiday. Mm. You might as well, you know, enjoy every second of it. It's a busman's holiday, as we would call over here. It's a busman's holiday. We've got Deathmatch Down Under, Saturday the 2nd of September.
Yes.
One of numerous dates that you've got in Australia.
Uh-huh.
You got a busy schedule?
Yeah, we've got a few going on. So I land in Melbourne on the 24th, and then we will fly to Perth on the 25th. And that is where I will be defending the North Ultraviolet Championship at Dude Where's My Ring, which is such
a
cool
brilliant
name.
So no rope, no, just the canvas, none of that.
Nope. Just a floor with some weapons and some people who are going to be drinking and having a great time.
The last time I had I heard a show like that, and I hope Danny O'Doherty doesn't mind me saying it, was when Rise put on a show and there was a logistical error and they didn't have a ring. So they just went, right, no ring! You're a no ring show!
Is that when they did the no ring rumble?
Yeah.
How did people get eliminated from that? I can't remember.
They just left through the crowd. I'm not too sure. Maybe we'll draw a line and they'll go. I don't remember that. I don't remember how they got eliminated, but they definitely had a no ring show. And it was.
I was in Leeds, I think, wasn't it?
It was in Leeds. Yeah. I hope I'm not exposing the business if I said it was a logistical error.
You may
led to a no ring.
It's classic Britress. You know, you got to roll with the punches.
That's
you?
It. It's the ingenuity that I love. No ring show. It's fantastic. But Dude, Where's My Ring? Literally, just that's their remit. They save a bunch on money for the show, and they have a different proposition.
Exactly.
It's incredible.
And it leads people to be a little bit more creative in what they do. I don't know if you saw that clip of someone who wrestled there giving their opponent like a spinning head scissors whilst they were stuck to a chair. And it's sick. It's so sick. It should go viral.
I bet the creativity in your brain thinking about Dude, Where's My Ring? I bet you've got ideas already.
There's a couple of things bouncing around, which you might have seen by now. When this comes out, I don't know.
You might have done. So you got in Perth for Dude, Where's My Ring?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Deathmatch Down Under from there, or have I missed a couple of dates in there? Should have written them down.
No, right? So it's Dude, Where's My Ring against James Harkness is the guy who's going to be challenging me for this belt. Then
this makes it a world title, though.
I believe so.
That is the kayfabe wrestling rule. Mm-hmm. If it's defended in international waters, it becomes a world title. Therefore, the North Ultraviolet Championship becomes a world title before the world title does. No shade on Leon Spencer.
Why didn't he take it in his bag?
He should have taken it.
He's over there now. He's got homecoming weekend coming up.
He should have taken a GC dub with him. Honestly.
I mean, fair play. He is sick. Like,
he's phenomenal. he's great, but you're going to make that a world title, more importantly. That's exciting.
So, Dude, Where's My Ring? Then got a little bit of a break. There might be some other stuff that I might pick up along the way.
Are you kind of putting yourself out there into the wrestling circuit of Australia and going, hey, I'm here?
Yeah.
Somewhat how Amir Jordan has done with Canada. Because Amir Jordan went over and he went, I'm here. Who's around?
Yeah, I mean, people know that I'm coming. Joel, who runs Deathmatch Down Under, has put my name out there. So there might be some stuff that just pops up along the way. To get to Deathmatch Down Under. If it does, great, obviously. I want to wrestle as much as possible. If it doesn't, I'm going to a country that I've never been to before.
Yeah.
And there's stuff that I'm aware of in Melbourne that I want to like see and go to and stuff like that. So it's all part of the journey, you know.
Is there something in particular that you're buzzing to do while you're over there that isn't wrestling?
Yes. I really... really want to go to Paran Skate Park.
Right.
Which is I've been told 40 minutes away from where Joel lives, because there's a skate film called All This Mayhem that came out a few years ago, and it's about Ben and Tas Pappas, who were these two skateboarding prodigies from Australia.
Nice.
And that is where they kind of got noticed. That's where they started.
So you're going to go and skate there?
I'm not going to go and skate.
Have a go.
I can't stand up. My balance is awful. My balance is awful on a skateboard.
Gabby gets you to do things that you can't bring yourself to do. So I think Gabby should get you doing an indie nose bone.
I can't go to a skate park with that much history.
If Tony Hawk can do it at 65, you'll be fine.
I'll break something and then I won't be able to defend this.
That is true.
But yeah, so I want to go and visit that and just go and like see the ramp that they skated and everything and kind of like take it all in. Because again, that's another film that I've watched over and over and over again. It's a very, very sad story, but it's got a happy ending in a way. But yeah, it's just, and their like philosophy kind of like came through to me as well. Like they were just, this is what we love to do. Let's just go balls to the wall. Let's barns it, as they say. And then I was watching that. I was just like, yeah, deathmatch wrestling. This is what I love. Let's just barns it and go balls to the wall with it and just really, you know, show my passion for it. So their mentality kind of like came through. But yeah, I really want to go to Paran Skate Park, and I will go.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you barns it in Australia. If you are listening to this on the podcast feed or on the Patreon, look in the description. You'll see all the dates where Clint's wrestling and a little email if you want to pop up and say hello.
Yes.
We'll do that. So you can get out there if you're out there.
Yes.
I like to end on this one. It's a little bit deep, but it can lead to some opening of eyes. Say we have the chance to go back and we can take you back and see yourself at his younger age, and as you are suplexing your brother onto the broken slats of your mum's bed, you can impart your younger self with a little bit of wisdom to take forward in their life. What would you tell them?
Don't second guess every little thing. If you want to do something, do it. Just don't talk yourself out of it. That is probably the best thing that I would love to tell my younger self. Because like I've said earlier, there's been opportunities that I've not taken, which could have led to other things, which I try not to dwell on stuff because everything happens for a reason, I guess. But there's been other times where I've just been like, I should have done that. Because if I'd have done that, who knows what would have been different. So yeah, never second guess. If you want to do something, just go and do it.
I thought you might have said chair shots to the back, but that's probably better.
And don't take any chair shots to the back.
Clint
took my breath away with that one.
Clint Margera, go barns it in Oz, fella.
Thank you very
go
much,
barns
mate.
It.
Cheers, dude.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.